All right, let's get a couple of people in here first, Brad. I think some people gonna join my second.
All right, like 2 minutes.
All right, here they come. There we go. So we'll get some more eyes in here before we start up. Wait for one more. Let's see. Get to one more number. All right, let's kick it off. What's good, Wagering World? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas, and I'm broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World, and I'm in here joined by my co-host, man, the OG of the show. He's been with me since day one, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreader Stair? How are you this morning?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. Ready to talk about what we saw over the weekend, and then, of course, look ahead to what is it, NFL week 8 coming up. Time flies when you're having fun.
It is flying by, Spread, too fast, because as soon as it's over, we're going to be geeking for it to come back. So we usually start the season really happy. Then it comes a little grind around this time and Thanksgiving. You need a little break. And then when the Super Bowl comes and leaves, you get all sad because you know that your time of making easy money is gone. Rough weekend this weekend, but this is what happens. We had an outstanding weekend the prior weekend. That's why I call the show Mount Everest, because Nick Saban, he has a warning that he uses for all of his team, Spread, and he says in the warning that more people die on the way down from Mount Everest than on the way up, so you can never relax. So, guys, we got to the top of the mountain last week, no losses, but we died on the way coming back down this week. So it's just a lesson to stay on your game, stay tight. Sometimes when it comes to this sports betting stuff, man, you're going to have off weeks. This was just one of those very public weeks. When the public wins, I don't win, because I'm rarely aligned with the public. Usually I'm more aligned with the books, simply because it's a reason that they have those billion-dollar, you know, facilities around the world. And my boy Chappie, you already know, we're going to always say it's no such thing as a loss on this show. It's always just L's for lessons, man. So we're going to take that, apply it, take what we learned from it, see which ones were bad beats, bad breaks, and which one were simply bad handicaps, and keep it moving. So let's get to the pass real quick, Spread.
All right, let's start on Saturday. The first game we want to talk about, Michigan first half -2.5 against Washington. Michigan blows the first half. I didn't sit down and watch college football till the evening, so I missed that one. What's going on? What happened there?
Just bad juju like we had all weekend, Spread. Michigan had a 7-0 lead, controlled the whole first half, missed a field goal that would have locked the money for us with about 2 minutes left, and then they allow DeMond Williams to go down the field and get a touchdown right before the half, man. They stopped him a couple times and end up getting some penalties to keep him going. And you know how frustrating that is when you have a side and you think you're off the field and that everything's over with. And then next thing that you know, they get the ball back. That never ends well, right? So I think the books wanted that first half, man. We got caught up in one. Bad beat, bad break, bad handicap. Just a bad break on that one. We live with it. Michigan ends up blowing them out in the second half. So this is one of the times when the first half harmed me instead of making it prosperous for us.
Man, I hate to say this one's not a bad break, but we've seen this a lot from Brian Kelly. And I think that's what we should expect for him going forward. Everyone knows what we think about Brian Kelly. You know what really stood out to me, Five Stars? This is Vanderbilt. Right? I mean, aren't they always at the bottom of the SEC here? Talk to me about what's going on there. And everyone knows how we feel about Brian Kelly, and we can go back to this if people really want to. But talk to me about Vanderbilt actually playing well. Do you think this is just kind of luck and they're just hitting people at the right time? Or do they finally have something going on in that program down there at Vanderbilt?
Well, if you're a veteran of the wagering world, you remember we made money off this same quarterback at New Mexico State when he was playing for Jerry Keel. We're talking about Pavia. We bet Diego Pavia all the time. He was one of the quarterbacks that I also featured and quarterbacks to bet on when we did that little thing at the beginning of the year when I talked about the guys to fade and the ones to bet on. And I was pretty good on that one. The only guy who I said to fade who stepped up a little bit was Joey Aguilar. But in the big games, as you saw this past week against Alabama, he's still a fade. But I was dead on all of the guys to bet on and all of the guys to fade, as we see Drew Aller, Arch Manning are all guys to fade. And Diago Pavia is one of those guys to bet. He's changed the entire culture over there at Vanderbilt, man. LSU, it's not going to be the same until we move out Brian Kelly. As simple as that. The thing that James Franklin received is what should have really happened to Brian Kelly. I feel like James Franklin got shorted, and I feel like they're giving Brian Kelly way too much leash. He should have already been gone. You can get together the money in LSU. I saw they were talking about doing a Bootsy and Young NBA Young Boy concert to raise the money to raise the money for the buyout to get Brian Kelly's ass out of Louisiana. They hate him more than they hated Derek Carr, man. So I don't think he's going to last the rest of the season. I'd be surprised if he lasts the rest of the year. But LSU coaches, the administration doesn't tend to fire coaches early. So he's the worst hire we've had in LSU since Jerry DiNardo. Maybe the coach that's over there on Vanderbilt sidelines ends up being the coach at LSU. We'll see moving forward. But this game just boiled down to they couldn't get Diego Pavia on the ground. He made a couple plays that decided this entire game. You still got Nussmeier, man. He's playing like a shell of himself. He already was a guy that made some bad decisions with the ball. He reminded me of a poor man's Tony Romo. You know, Tony Romo, really good athlete, real smooth, great passer, but makes a lot of mistakes in the clutch. And that's what we've seen from Nussmeier throughout his career. And that's why I compare him to Tony Romo. Same body build, similar game. But now Nussmeier's dealing with an oblique injury that's really hurt him all season long. He has not been able to get enough torque on his passes, man. And it's led to a lot of bad play on the offensive side of the ball. LSU has no excuse with all the talent they have with having, I'd say, 7 to 8 NFL players, first-round NFL players on the defensive side of the ball. They were missing their leader in Whit Weeks, so he was out this week. And Harold Perkins played one of the worst games of his career in Baton Rouge. But now we turn the page, and now it comes down to Brian Kelly's plan for his whole job at LSU. You know, his whole legacy at LSU this coming week is the A&M Aggies, who are really playing good ball and a team that I really like to bet. Have a really solid quarterback, and Marcel Reed is coming to town. First time in a very long time that the LSU Tigers have been underdogs at home coming up this week. Because right now they're getting 2.5 points. But the line's kind of telling me that LSU is going to put up a fight. We'll see. Just about this game, a little bit more. The LSU hadn't lost to Vanderbilt since 1990. I thought it was longer than that. So great job over there by the Commodores. They're having a lot of fun in Nashville, and all of it's due to Diego Pavia.
All right. Georgia -7 against Old Miss. Late cover there. What'd you see in that one?
When the 1% beats the 99%. We got blessed on this one. Going into the fourth quarter, I want to say Ole Miss was either up 7 points, 5 points, something like that, some odd number. It was either 9, 7, or 5. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I just was watching it and sweating it out. As soon as Georgia took the lead, I said to myself, Kirby's going to get this one for us, because Kirby Smart is one of those guys who he loves getting his alumni paid. And he ends up covering late for us as they get the late touchdown. Shout out to Gunnar Stockton. He's the type of quarterback that Kirby Smart really likes. They were talking about today about, and we'll talk about that a little bit more when we break down the Jets' loss to Carolina, embarrassing performance there. People were saying that Kirby Smart maybe was on point when he got rid of Justin Fields. And I say this to those who think that about Justin Fields. Kirby Smart, defensive coordinator, head coach. Mike Tomlin, even though he played receiver, he's a defensive-minded coach, defensive coordinator in the NFL for Minnesota, head coach. New York Jets, Aaron Glenn, defensive-minded, defensive coordinator, defensive head coach. Chicago Bears, Matt Eberflus, defensive coordinator, defensive-minded, defensive head coach. The only time he had an offensive-minded guy was Ryan Day. So this is the type of quarterback that Kirby enjoys coaching. He loves good old boys like Gunnar Stockton, who's going to cut up a little bit off the scene and run around and play hard on the field. And he showed up, as I told you guys, Trinidad Chambliss. He's a good player, but coming from Fair State and going on the road in SEC is a lot different. And when he got in that fourth quarter, he was 1 out of 10, was unable to do anything as the Bulldog defense steps up. But that offense for Georgia is really, really good. Lately, everything's changed. Similar to his mentor, Kirby Smart, is now an over guy. Like, you could bet the overs on most Georgia games, especially big games, because their offense tends to play better than their defense, much like what happened in the later years for Nick Saban as he evolved and start having less slug it out games and winning more with the offense. So just a great job by Kirby Smart, hell of a coach. Now we see, what does Lane Kiffin do? Is Ole Miss big enough to keep a star as bright as Lane Kiffin is in the college football world? I think that he should make a move. I don't know if it's to Florida or LSU, but I think he can do a little bit better than Ole Miss.
All right. Let's move to the NFL. We had a great game on Thursday Night Football. An exciting shootout there as two old quarterbacks doing it here for some of the older people out here like me watching the game. Pittsburgh-Cincinnati, both the old quarterbacks look good. Cincinnati squeaks out the win. Ja'Marr Chase has a career game and cashed the over 43.5. Pretty early in that one, huh? Yeah. That was a no-sweat bet if I've ever seen one there. Talk to me about what you saw between those two old quarterbacks, right? There was a reason Tomlin was pissed. I think he felt like he had a free win with Jake Browning, and then he knew he was in trouble. And, you know, some of those words came back to haunt him. Tomlin's actually not done well on the road for Thursday Night Football, so something to keep in mind going into next season. He just those road games, he doesn't do very well. Talk to me about what you saw there, and do you think that Flacco can keep it going in Cincinnati? Is Ja'Marr Chase going to be a happy man the rest of the year?
Mike Tomlin is now 2-10 on Thursday Night Football games on the road. Overall, now he's 14-22 on Thursday games. Now, if you go look at his record on Monday Night Football, it's outstanding, and it's because Tomlin is a prep guy. Very sharp dude, one of the smartest guys we've seen as a head coach in the NFL. That's why he's been there so long. That's why he's never had a losing season. Very, very analytical-minded guy that still also combines his intelligence with toughness. The Steelers, I don't know what was going on in that one. Sometimes the thing that does get me upset with Mike Tomlin in these type of games is because he kind of sticks to what they do. And sometimes you got to adjust things. That was the reason why he could never beat Brady. That's the reason he was upset when he saw Flacco coming, because he knew they were going to have problems with the Ravens. They could shut down Lamar because they know what Lamar is going to do. They do not want to come out of that zone defense that they play that is complete ass. It's easy to beat if you're a good quarterback, because there's so many holes in zone defense because nobody's putting a hand on the receivers coming off the line. That's why, like I said, Tom Brady used to just feast on the Steelers defense. Same thing goes on with Flacco. It's no adjustments made at all by the Steelers. They just continue to stay with one guy on this side, one guy on the next. They don't try to trail with Ja'Marr. They don't try to double him. They don't try to bump him on the line. They don't try to make life uneasy. He's just getting these free releases. And Flacco's smart enough to go right to him with the ball. Impressive effort by him. Super impressive effort by Aaron Rodgers. We remember we talked about on the show a couple years ago that I felt like after a couple years, we would see this season more of the Aaron Rodgers we saw in the past instead of the guy we saw at the Jets. As you saw, he still has a little bit of athleticism. He's always had some of the best feet in pro football. And we saw a little bit of that in this game. He made one throw to the tight end that gave him the lead that was old school vintage Rodgers. I jumped out the chair when he did it, man, because he rolled a little bit, and he throws the ball on a rope 45 yards down the field, a strike, and they end up getting ahead, a play that only Aaron Rodgers can make. So for the Steelers, things got to be looking up, because you actually have Rodgers playing as good as he's played in a long time. You got a young running game. Both of those guys have a little bit more juice than they had before with their running back, Najee Harris. Seems like Aaron Rodgers and DK Metcalf have a great connection, but boy, their defense, they're going to have problems with their defense. Those guys are really long in the tooth. They're really old. I don't understand Jalen Ramsey thinking that he could match up one-on-one with Jamar Chase. He took him to the woodshed, man. So that wasn't good. I think as the year moves forward, the Steelers, I'm going to have to adjust on defense, but good luck with that. We've seen this a million times before. Just as brilliant as Tomlin is, he's also kind of set in his ways, and that's been a thing that's really hurt him over the years from getting to more Super Bowls. Bengals, just a good showing, and I feel like Zach Taylor kind of proved what we already knew. Stefanski can't coach. Like, I mean, Flacco looked like a completely different guy over there with Cincinnati, man. So, shout out to the Bengals organization for finessing the Browns out of a quarterback, man. And now maybe they can sneak into the playoffs. I know that for sure Jamar Chase has to be happy in the rest of their receiving corps because they weren't getting any passes with Jake Brown, and now they're back eating.
Yeah, so that's exciting to see Cincinnati back, at least respectable, because they put forth a couple of performances. Made them look like one of the worst teams in the league, but they're back to right, just being at least an any given Sunday team, a team that I don't know if is any given Sunday. And I'll take my L on here, five star. I thought Aaron Glenn was going to do pretty well there from the New York Jets, but probably need a couple more years as a defensive coordinator, or maybe just needs to stay as a defensive coordinator. Really rough showing there. The only thing I can say for the Jets is, and the Broncos, because I saw we lost both those. That's just the NBA guy in me. Those were tough scheduling spots coming back from that international game. One thing for the Broncos, because they at least escaped with the win. But the Jets, I don't really know what happens here. And one of my guilty pleasures to get away my mind off the Raiders has been listening to New York Jets radio. And they're not happy with Glenn already. And, you know, sometimes I think they're being unfair. But I hate to say it, a lot of the criticisms are warranted. The team is obviously worse with pretty close to the same personnel. I mean, you saw the difference between what Robert Saleh did, and we'll get into that a little bit later, what he was able to do last night as well. So I want to feel sorry for myself as a Raiders fan, but the Jets, I feel like, have it even worse. More talented players, their careers are going to waste. You know, Garrett Wilson's a great player. I like Breece Hall a lot. Quinnen Williams, a great defensive tackle. It's not like they don't have talent. Unbelievable how bad this team is. What did you see?
Just poor coaching. Justin Fields is one of those quarterbacks who needs a quarterback coach or an offensive coordinator who understands the importance of working with mechanics at every practice, that understands the importance of keeping him sharp, who understands the importance of doing film study with him, who understands the importance of his feet lining up with his throws, who understands the importance of just getting them technically sound every week, because if not, he loses it. This guy's looked like a completely different dude under Ryan Day, and it just shows you how great a coach that Ryan Day is. I don't put it all on Justin Fields. I feel like he's not being coached right with the Jets. He, unfortunately for him, he went to three organizations in the NFL, and none of those organizations are quarterback friendly. They don't develop quarterbacks well over the years. The Steelers have had two really good quarterbacks, and both of those guys were just super athletes in Terry Bradshaw and Big Ben, who kind of called their own plays and kind of ran the offense on their own. And then the organization dealt with everything else and just gave them the offense. That's why they're having a winning season now with Aaron Rodgers, because that's the type of guy he is as well. He just wants you to give him the offense, get the hell out the way, let him do what he wants to do. But if you have a guy who needs to develop him, a guy who needs to, you know, be taught how to play quarterback, they're in trouble coming to Pittsburgh. We know they're in trouble going to the Jets. We know that they're in trouble also going over there to Chicago. Chicago has been around since the beginning of the NFL. They've had one quarterback, and I think his name was like Sammy Ball or something, right? From like the roaring 20s. Like, they have not developed the quarterbacks well, man. And Caleb Williams, he looks like ass too. You saw last yesterday against the Saints, he didn't do anything. They won because of the running game and the defense. So Justin Fields, just when the 49ers passed up on him, that changed his whole career trajectory. Now he's going to be one of those guys who's passed around, because I'm sure after they fire Aaron Glenn in the offseason, they're going to probably trade Justin Fields or cut him. So he'll become a journeyman in the NFL, and probably he's a nice guy, so he'll probably be a backup for some team when he had the potential that we saw at Ohio State to be a real player, because Justin Fields used to deal from the pocket. If you watched enough tape on him in college, you saw that. Carolina, Dave Canales is doing a good job with their team. They're highlighting what Bryce Young can do. They're protecting the ball. They're running the ball really well with Rico Dowdle, who's shining since he left the Cowboys over there. He's giving them a real offensive weapon. Him and Keyshawn Judkins are probably playing the best out of all the running backs in the NFL right now. I put Javonte Williams for Cowboys right up there with him as well. But Carolina just was a more sound, better coached, more prepared team. It was a bad handicap on my part on both of these games, on this game and the Denver game. And the reason why is because I'm not an NBA guy. So when I'm thinking about these games, I'm not even factoring in scheduling as far as them coming from overseas. And as you said, that is something that we need to bring up. He's the best right now dropping dimes. I appreciate it. Jonathan Taylor is number one right now out of all the running backs. You're right. If this was 1985, he'd be the MVP front runner.
You like him over Bijan?
They're right together, man. Both of them are
nice. It's tough.
Bijan.
Hey, McCaffrey kind of reminded us last night too. We can't leave him out anymore.
Bijan and McCaffrey. Did I tell you about I met McCaffrey and Bijan together? Shout out to my boy. Bobby Williams. If you guys are ever in Pacific Palisades out in LA, he has a beautiful facility right on the Pacific highway right there, man. Beautiful facility called Stratosphere. And it's a workout place. And Bobby was a mountain climber. So since he did mountain climbing, he developed all of this high tech, cutting edge technology where you can get the same lung exercises from climbing mountains, but right there in his facility. And Bijan works out over there all the time with McCaffrey this summer. I met both of them over there when me and my wife were visiting out there in Pacific Palisades. So those two dudes work out a lot, and I was so thrilled to see them going back and forth. I think that's why McCaffrey had a little bit extra juice last night. We won that bet. We had the Niners for the first half in the game, and I think he had a little extra juice because he was playing against his homeboy, Bijan, his little homie, you know, because Bijan's a little younger than him. And he played really well. I think that was his first rushing touchdown of the year, and they swapped jerseys after. But Stratosphere, if you guys enjoy working out and you're in that L.A. area, man, look up Stratosphere. It is state-of-the-art training, and a lot of pros train there. But specifically, I know for sure that McCaffrey and Bijan Robinson train there. And as you said, those two guys are still at the top at running back, but Jonathan Taylor is having a hell of a year. But back to this game, just the Jets are lost, man. They're not the team that they were. They are playing better on defense, so I will give that to Aaron Glenn. Really good defensive coordinator who's been good everywhere he's been over there. So he's getting those guys aligned right, but that offense looks horrible. I think a lot of Jets backers like myself, as mean as it sounds, we're kind of happy when Justin Fields came out, and we were hoping that, you know, the backup could stay in a little bit longer because he's shown himself to be a more of a pro-style quarterback than Justin Fields. But just a bad handicap by me by not factoring in the travel. And on the Denver game, same thing as well. It's not factoring in the travel. Great showing by Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart has an opportunity to be the Brett Favre of this league. Brett Favre threw a lot of interceptions and threw a lot of touchdowns, had a lot of highs, a lot of lows. He was able to get one Super Bowl. If Dart can bring the Giants one Super Bowl, he's had a great career. So I think that he's going to have a trajectory much like Brett Favre. I see the entertainment aspect. I see the crash dummy in a good type of way aspect about him, kind of like Brett Favre, where he'll go all out. He's not afraid of contact. He's just out there hooping, man. He's playing. So shout out to Jackson Dart. He continues to impress me with figuring out ways to get it done, even though he's not the best guy from the pocket. And they're doing all of this without Malik Nabers. So I think next year we might see a jump in Jackson Dart. Bo Nix going through the sophomore slump. I never was a big Bo Nix guy at Auburn, but I really was impressed with the jump that he made with his ability to run an offense at Oregon. Probably was the players around him, probably not getting hit as much, you know, out in the Pac-12 when you got the best offensive line. But now with the Broncos, Sean Payton is, you know, schooled him, gave him a really good foundation to be a pro. He is having a little sophomore slump slightly because now people are getting more and more film on him. But what never lets Bo Nix down is his competitiveness and his ability to use his athleticism. And that's the same thing that I saw in Dart. Two young guys who can run around and are a lot more athletic than people think. So that was a really exciting game. Feel really bad for that kicker. For the Giants, man, misses the extra point. And I heard the Daboll chewed him out, and you could tell Daboll's not a nice guy. Like, I heard he talked to the kid really bad. And I don't know if they've cut him yet, but I'm sure he'll probably be on the waiver wire this morning. But that Giants and Denver game was outstanding. And the guy pointed out to me, who follows me, I think his name is Stephen Harrison, if I'm not mistaken. Usually he's into the show. He might be at work or something and catch it later. But he pointed out to me that how poetic it was that it was Demaryius Thomas Day, rest in peace to that legend, and they were retiring his jersey. We saw Peyton Manning was really shook up about that, and he got emotional because they hung his jersey right next to Peyton's, and he was Peyton's wide receiver one when Peyton Manning was there. And when Peyton Manning broke all of the records for single-season touchdowns, a lot of those went to Demaryius Thomas, and he died tragically way too young at 33. And how poetic was it that the Broncos won this game with 33 points?
Foster, I'm going to tell you something, and you're never going to be able to unsee it. You know who I think Bo Nix's real dad is?
Who?
Bill Romanowski. The guy looks dead on like him. I'm like, no way this.
He does. His dad's going to be pretty upset, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we were going to have a couple upsets there towards the end. Looked like Arizona was going to get it done against Green Bay as well. But
it was a group play. It wasn't a public play. We had the plus seven on that. But I'm just used to, you know, at least hitting that six to seven or ten. And this week it was all negative for me, Ski, Jay Money. We all had a bad week.
Well, yeah, I mean, the books cleaned up this week. Or, no, the books got smacked this weekend.
So I got smacked.
We usually do. Yeah, because so just look at Sunday only. All favorites covered through the 1 p.m. Thing. And then the only underdog to win straight up yesterday, so the money line parlays that those people love too, where they just take everyone money line. The only underdog that won was Dallas. And they were only plus 1.5.
They weren't really an underdog. Believe me, public bet them than anything, spread, especially with CeeDee Lamb coming back.
Real chalky day yesterday. So,
shout out to the public. You guys ate yesterday. All you guys who do the 8-leg money line parlays, you should have cashed it.
Yeah.
Poor old us being so smart.
They can run. Yeah. The 8-leg money line parlay. they got their money for the rest of the year. They got all their gambling money. So congrats to them. Real quick, we'll move to the present, but I didn't want to talk to you about the 49ers game that we saw last night. And just to say that's after watching the Raiders this morning, and we talked about the Jets as well, and some of these times we see these teams, it's not that the talent is that bad, it's the coaching. And the 49ers are the exact opposite, man. That their team is coached so well. And the main takeaway I had last night is I'm going to put Sala up there with Vic Fangio, Mike McDonald, Mike Tomlin. So he's ahead of Tomlin, actually, because of versatility in his schemes. I mean, he, to me, is a top four defensive mind. And this 49ers team is dangerous. And I think I underestimated how much he means to that team as we saw them kind of get weaker as the defensive coordinators continued to get worse there. And the performance that he put together last night with no Fred Warner, no Nick Bosa, and the way they were able to compete out there. And the other thing I was really impressed with was Shanahan really taking the pressure off of Mac Jones. They really ran the ball well and give their offensive line credit. A bunch of third rounders getting it done. I wish the Raiders could do some of that. But they really kept Mac Jones out of the positions where he could beat himself, because we know that he can't do that. So just wanted to give a shout out to the 49ers coaching staff. It was one of the games where if we would have talked about it last week, you know, around this time, I liked Atlanta plus three. And that money really threw me off. You start getting worried when you get a public dog like that, right? Talk to me about what you think. I think you probably agree with me on the Niners. The Falcons, though, what do we make of this team? I'm at the point of just putting them like I used to with the Nuggets about 3 or 4 years ago and just bet them at home, fade them on the road. It doesn't even look like close to the same team, especially with that team speed. What do you make of the Atlanta Falcons, and what do we do with them going forward?
You hit it on the nail. They're more of a home team. Even though I had them against Buffalo, I was really surprised. I was actually thrilled when the line went down to almost a pick 'em before,
it was plus one right before kicked.
Yeah, and it made me.
I took the Niners money line just because.
I got a lot of my money back that I lost during the day betting 1-2 units on things. That evening, because I ended up putting 3 units on Arizona plus 7, and then I unloaded. I took all of those winnings, which was about 5.5 units, and dumped it on the Niners first half. Then I was able to also roll it over and take the second half plus 0.5. So I ended up not losing any money. I didn't send it all out to the group because at that point, you don't want to get the chasing when you're down a couple units. We have bigger bankrolls because we've been fortunate enough to be doing this such a long time and have been winning so long that, you know, we have a little bit bigger bankroll than just your average novice bettors. But from what I saw from the game was just Mac Jones is the guy. Trent Williams trusts Mac Jones, and as long as Trent Williams trusts you, you're going to be good on offense. We got a McCaffrey showing. Shanahan, once again, great play calling. It's just no way in hell on the road I'm taking Raheem Morris against Shanahan at home. He's just not going to be able to keep up X and O. And I think Raheem Morris does a really good job with that team. As you saw, they win the game all the way to the fourth quarter. It's just they're still young. They're young at receiver. They're young at running back. Even though they're outstanding at running back and receiver, Drake London and Bijan are really good pros, they're still kids, you know, and they have a ways to go. Their defense is young as well. He's building something really good. They're not going to be who they're supposed to be until Michael Penix becomes the guy that we know he's going to be ultimately. Right now, he still is dealing with the jitters of being an NFL quarterback in big moments. You know, you got all that hand size, all that accuracy that we saw in college, and it has not transitioned to the NFL. He's not been really accurate. That's what worries me about him. And he also has shown an inability for touch. He doesn't know when everything's a gas, everything he's throwing, just like same like the other left-handed quarterback out there in Cleveland. Dylan Gabriel, he's throwing with no touch. Everything is, you know, since they're afraid they're going to get picked off, they're zipping everything. And that means you're nervous, because if you're in the pocket and you're calm and you're playing your game, you can tell what type of pass it needs to be, whether it needs to be gas or it needs to be a little softer, maybe, you know, more of a touch pass. And everything with him is coming out gas. So he has to calm himself down. He has to deal better with the pressure. You know, he's the first time being the guy. But I think that he will adjust and he'll be just fine. I think they have a really bright future. The Niners, the future is now. This is their opportunity to stay in the race. I still think the Rams, as we took them to win the NFC West over the Niners, I think the Rams are still the class of that division. As we saw, even without Puka Nacua, they raced to a 21-0 lead over against Jacksonville at their home stadium pretty much in England. And I'm so ticked I missed that game, because I wanted the Rams first half minus 1.5 and for the game minus 3. By the time I woke up, it was 21-0. I was so ticked. I'm like, man, I usually could wake up on time, but I guess I was up a little bit too late with the wife the night before and I woke up late. But the 49ers are okay, because they play the style of defense that they play. The style of offense is still the same. It's the Shanahan, Robert Saleh combo. They play really good together. I'd say that they're the best tandem right up there with my guys in Minnesota, Kevin O'Connell and my guy Brian Flores. Even though they lose to the Eagles, you saw that Brian Flores has figured out how to stop the tush push.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that was a fun game too with the Eagles and the Vikings. And I think, you know, my final takeaway is it just shows how important coaching is, because with the salary cap, with these guys moving on so quickly, so many talented players, right? We talked about, you know, the Jets and the Raiders. I mean, the dregs of the league, the Titans, right? I could, three of the best defenders in the NFL. And Max Crosby, Simmons in Tennessee, and Quinnen Williams. I mean, these are three top players, and it just doesn't matter. It shows you how important coaching really is. Do you want to answer that question? And then we'll move on to the
dimes.
Present.
If you'll just DM me on X, if you can't DM me, just hit my ad sign and I'll DM you and speak to you about that. I do have two slots that open. Who is this guy? Didn't send it to the group. You in my group? I don't think you're in my group. I don't know you. But no, I didn't send the 49ers game to the group. We decided to wait till tennis. And on tennis that night, we went 4 out of 5 on tennis. But no, I did not send that to the group. I don't think you're in my group, though.
All right.
Thank you, bro.
Let's talk about tonight's games.
Yeah.
Five star. You know, I do content early. Like, for example, I'll give out my picks tomorrow with Tyler. And one of the ones I gave out last Tuesday, and I wrote it up too, was the Lions at -5.5. But the more things are going on, the more I'm a little worried about this pick. I don't think they made the total very easy either. 52.5. It almost, you know, I like betting under in primetime games, although lately Sunday night's been more of an under night. Monday night's been more of an overnight. But it almost feels like they want me to take the Bucks here and the under. My initial lean is towards the Lions. Should I stick with that initial lean? Just the idea they're coming off a loss. We talked about the Falcons being faster at home, and the Lions are the same way. I think the Lions probably a little better on the road because they have so much more experience being a top team. But the same deal, the Lions at home, they average over the last two seasons, I think, 37 points a game at home. I mean, this team puts up points, so I shouldn't be afraid to lay it with them. But, boy, after yesterday, I'm thinking there might be a massive comeback here for the books because I wonder how many parlays are closed out with either Lions money line or Lions -6. Your thoughts here on tonight's game between the Lions and the Bucks?
We're on the same side. I like the Lions as a home team. I love Dan Campbell coming off a loss where they didn't show up too well on primetime against Kansas City. We also know Jared Goff is a really good primetime quarterback as well. I think that a lot of money is going to be on Baker Mayfield. You know, I think that people are in love with the Baker Mayfield story, his ability to come back, and a lot of dudes to bet are going to say, shit, Baker getting 6 points, I'm going to have to roll with it and try it. I do think that the Lions get this one done, and I am laying the 6 points on this one. I will be playing the Lions tonight. That's actually an official play for me. I'm just a Dan Campbell guy, man. So he knows that they have to get a victory tonight because the Packers won last night, so they're going to try to keep up with them in the standings. Also, as I said, a lot of motivation with them not playing like their normal selves last week in Kansas City. So back home at Ford Field, I think that we see some points, and I think we see a lot of them from this side of Detroit. And I will not be surprised if Detroit is able to turn over the books a couple times. Kelvin Shepard is a much better defensive coordinator than Aaron Glenn is, and he gets those guys running around. I hope that Kelvin Shepard is considered for the LSU job.
All right. Oh, total moved to 53 offshore while we're talking here.
Exactly. And I had that one took. Dan Campbell's 11-0 against the spread after a loss since 2022. Great job. Shout out,
Cab. This total here, 53 now, five-star. It's moving up as we speak.
You can only bet the over on this game. It's kind of like the Cowboys and Washington game. Like, it doesn't matter what number they put up there, unless they're putting 70, it's all doable on that turf and with these two teams. And the Bucs are going to have both their receivers, all three of their receivers tonight, I think, right?
No. I don't think
so. Is Mike Evans not playing?
I don't think Evans is going to play. Let me double check. I'm pretty sure Egbuka and Godwin are out for sure. And let me see if we have some Evans news. I got to scroll all the way down in it.
They got Egbuka questionable.
Godwin out. Irvin out. Mike Evans still questionable. Egbuka still questionable, actually.
Yeah, I think that one of those guys or both of them might play.
I wonder if they're reacting to the news here. All right. Yeah. Because if Ibuka's in, it definitely helps the total for going over the number. Tempe is 3-0 on the road this year.
Total spread. That's a good look, too, as well.
Well, yeah, they averaged 37 points at home. And my guess is
26 and a half.
It's probably like 28 and a half.
That's high. But I think they can get there. And then my guy Ant says, what you think about sticking with the Lions first half? Let the market shake out a little bit, Ant, because the Bucks, they can score. So, you know, you might get in a situation where it's a tie ball game at halftime or 3 points or something like that dealing with Baker. Let it shake out a little bit more. I'm never against the first half, though. Drop a Dime says he likes the first half, too. So a lot of people like the Lions first half. They have been a really outstanding first half team. I just don't want to make it an official play on the first half yet. It's a couple of things I'd like to look at right before kickoff, especially with the information that I get with warm-ups. I need to see how guys are warming up. If, you know, if Jameson Williams is looking like he's coming to play, if, you know, Jared Goff looks sharp in pregame, if Baker looks like he's sharp, those type of things, this type of information that I get right before kickoff.
I'm looking right now. I don't see any updates on both those guys who were questionable. So
Shane, that's Lindsay, definitely something to be looking at. He is always in here with us. He says Evans is expected to play. He says Godwin is out, and he says he expects Ibuka. It says 60% he will be there.
Okay, so yeah, it's a true questionable. Okay, so that's enough for that game. Let's move on to the other one. One of your favorites take the field, and it actually is a team that it's making you a lot of money and that you've been high on since we did our offseason previews. Mike McDonald and the Seattle Seahawks will be at home right now, laying 3 on my offshore, but you can get a 3.5. I think it's going to fluctuate for the rest of the day. So if you like the Seahawks, bet the 3 right now. I wouldn't be surprised to see a 3.5 hit the board because I've seen those up there all week. Houston Texans, 3.5, depending on what you like. Total of 41. I have less conviction on this game. I actually think this is a tough game. I think it's because these are two teams that I both believe are undervalued. The Texans, of course, because of their slow start, and the Seahawks just because if you took out the stats, we would love Sam Darnold. But, you know, that name and what we've seen from the Seahawks as a franchise kind of being inconsistent, getting off some hot starts before and then returning to earth. So maybe a little bias there. But what do you think when the Seahawks take on the Texans, 5-star?
Well, I told you guys, like, on Thursday on J Money and Friday when Ski and I, this was my biggest bet. I'm out there heavy on this one. I got about 10 units on the Texans plus 3.5, and I'm probably going to bet if the number's so low, it might not even be worth taking the money line, because I think it's like plus 120 or plus 115, because the books know that they could very much win outright.
Offshore, I got plus 150 for you right now.
That's what I need. So what I'll do is when we get off the line, maybe I'll shoot you something and we can figure that out, because I'm looking for a plus 150 in town. There's nowhere to be found here in Vegas.
Really?
They got me a little ticked off on betting on them anyway. Man, I took a bet last night at 12 o'clock on Caesars and lumped them. I'm talking about hit them on a plus 450 for a nice bag, and they've been holding my money all day. They have not cleared it, and I had all types of bets this morning to bet on tennis, so it kind of upset me. But back to this game, I think that the Texans are more undervalued than Seattle. What I worry about with Seattle is what's their identity, right? Like, if everything boils down to it, is I guess it's Darnold and Jackson Smith and Jigba, right? But I think that DeMeco is the perfect defensive coordinator to give Darnold some issues and bring back out the old Sam Darnold that we're used to seeing. We know that if you take away his first read, you put some pressure on him with 4, he tends to make some bad, you know, mistakes with the ball and make some bad judgment plays. And I think we'll see a little bit of that tonight. I think that the Texans are morphing into who they are on offense. This was a good week for them to be off with them rolling like they have, to put in a little bit more work. And the difference is that now DeMeco Ryans is sticking his head more in the offensive coordinator's office. He's sticking his head more in the quarterback room, paying more attention because he gave the play calling duties to his defensive coordinator. And since Matt Burke has been calling the plays, they've only given up 5 points per game. So I like everything that's going on right there on Kirby and 16 out there in Houston. So I like the Texans to come on the road tonight. I think the Texans are just a better team overall. I think that clearly the best unit out of all of these teams is the defense for the Texans. I expect a really, really focused Derek Stingley. I think a very focused Lassiter, who are the best cornerback combo in the whole league. I think that we see some pressure from Danielle Hunter. We see some pressure from also from Will Anderson. As long as the linebackers tackle for the Texans, that's been their only issue, is who can they trust at middle linebacker. You can go with Tuatu, who's missed way too many tackles. Then you got EJ Speed, who came over there from the Colts. I like him a little bit better. So we'll see who they run with at the linebacker position and who does D'Amico trust the most. I think that this is a game where we're going to see a lot of Nico. When Nico and CJ are right, they're hard to take out of the game plan. We're seeing Nick Cayley do a lot better job on these play designs. And I think it also has a lot to do with the evolution of Woody Marks. Woody Marks is a really good running back. Appreciate that, Ant. That's what I need to see. So I'll go downtown and drop to the circle. My guy over there, Mr. Stevenson, that's my homie. He'll let me put something down over there. He'll let me make a good bet. And Sheem Lindsay agrees with me. That's all they have, because I do not trust their running back.
Kenneth Walker is actually a great player. He's just not getting no run.
And that's another thing. It's the offense spread. It's Clint Kubiak. Clint Kubiak is – D'Amico is really, really, really familiar with that offense. You know why?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because
he was with the board. He broke down on Monday. He told – he went to the podium and kind of described the offense better than they could, because, you know, he came up playing for Coach Kubiak. So he saw that in practice against it all the time. Then he becomes the DC for Shanahan, who is a disciple of his dad. His dad gave that offense to Kubiak, Gary Kubiak, who was his
the backup
player
for Elway for 15 years. I can't believe they don't do that more often with how important the backup is. Just let the same guy be your backup for 10 years.
And Gary Kubiak gave an office to his son, Clint. So it's all like, this is all the tree that D'Amico is really familiar with. So he says that he knows they're going to try to run them, beat them on the stretch runs, and then come out the stretch and bootleg what they've been doing all year. And they're going to jump on the short stuff, where the first read that Sam gets when he pulls it out on the bootleg is over in the flats, that banana route, and he's going to end up having to go down the field, and that's when the mistakes are going to happen, tip balls across the middle and things like that. So I like the Texans on this one a lot. I'm real heavy on the Texans on this game. I think that the nation is going to see this tonight, that this is the best defense in the NFL.
All right, and they'll be making a statement against the Seahawks defense that's – I don't think they get the credit for it, but by a lot of the advanced metrics that I know, a lot of the bettors that I talk to like.
They like Charbonnet Sheem Lindsay because he's a straightforward runner. Me and Spread have been betting on Kenneth Walker. Remember, he made so much money at Michigan State.
Some people at Seattle think that they don't think that he can take more than 15 carries a game because he's had so many injury problems, and that they're not really going to ramp up. You know, as long as they keep winning, they're not going to ramp them up until the end of the year, because
he's so versatile. But the problem with Kenneth Walker is he's always, because his speed and his ability to elude tackles, he's always looking to bounce stuff and make it into a big play, and that turns the yards being lost against a team like the Texans, especially, who swarm. That it ends up where you're trying to bounce it instead of hitting straight ahead. We know Charbonnet isn't doing any bouncing. He's straight ahead at 100 miles per hour. So I think that's more aligned with what Mike McDonald wants to have as a physical nature on the offense, to go with the way he likes to call defense. So I think that's why they like Charbonnet more. But you got to watch Kenneth Walker, especially in the passing game.
Charbonnet is one of those guys that and we talked about it before with the backup quarterbacks. When you don't see him that often, like I remember arguing with Tyler, I'm going, he's one of the best backups in the league. He could be a starter anywhere, right? Because you're only seeing him in 5-10 carries at a time.
Right.
Right. Now that he's getting more work, he's not bad, but I'm just like average, right? Average running back, right?
You got to have holes. He can't do anything.
He hits the hole. He does what he's supposed to, but he's not creating, you know, the way that a real top running back, like actually, I believe Kenneth Walker can do. when he's at his best. So that'll be something to keep an eye on as the season progresses. I don't think we'll see it tonight, though, the Kenneth Walker usage. I think he's going to be kept to 50% or less of the snaps there, and that could be another thing working with the Texans' advantage, because if this was week 17 and everything was on the line, I wouldn't be surprised if they just gave Walker as many carries as possible. But feels like they got him on a pitch count out there. Do we talk about this total here? 41, right after this game of 53. That's going to start at 4 o'clock Eastern, 7 Pacific. Oh, yeah, Texans fans aren't happy about starting, what, 10 p.m. their time?
They'll be okay. They go out on
– I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about the fans.
Yeah, I'm saying they like it's a lot of oil and energy guys out there who do have to get up early in the morning, but they'll survive.
Yeah, and the kids, Houston, man.
It's a lounge city, man. Houston's a lounge and bar town. You could go out Monday through Sunday at 11 o'clock at night, and the bars are jumping, the lounges are jumping.
I know a lot of people watch these games with their kids, you know, and it's going to be tough to tell Junior, right?
Me and Ian will be locked in because he loves the Texans, you know, and he can't wait for the Rockets to start this year. He's so hyped for KD being there. This guy says, any thoughts? What about this spread? Answer this for him.
That's what I'm thinking. They're 23.5. Yeah, I kind of like the under 41 as well. That's why I was going to ask you. I actually kind of like that better than a side in my own personal handicap, only because, like I said, this is two teams that I want to buy, and they're going against each other here. But the reason I want to buy them both of them is essentially the defense. So that's why I was looking at this under 41 here. Maybe Seahawks team total is a better idea, however, because it's kind of inflated due to the fact of the three-point spread.
Yeah.
What do you think of the total tonight?
You got to go under because the Texans only give up like 13, 14 points a game. I would say they're only giving up 61 points all year, which tells me it's probably going to go over. You know how this goes. It's always seems like the opposite of these standalone guys, but I'm not a totals guy, but I would definitely look at that Seattle under 23.5 for sure.
I'm just saying you take out that shootout with Tampa Bay that Seattle had. And, you know, the most points they've given up is 20. They've been under 20 in every other game. So good defenses on both sides here. I don't know. I like betting unders.
Yeah, you
would know why.
Y'all like punch
I don't know why. It's almost like when I watch the clock moving, it's relaxing.
Yeah, like, come on.
Things are going my way. Like, come last on, night.
Yeah, they got to stop.
Yeah, I had the under last night, and I was just loving the fact that both teams were just running the ball so well. And Atlanta, you know, almost more West Coast than Shanahan. When they don't hand it up to Bijan, they have so many short passes that are, you know, like the original Bill Walsh, Roger Craig idea. This is such an easy pass that it's essentially a run play. But when you have a guy like Bijan Robinson, it gives them a lot of space. But just they not a lot of plays last night. Another reason why I was impressed with Shanahan's coaching. It's like we know this defense is beat up. We know this team is beat up. Let's shorten these games.
Yeah,
we don't need 95 plays in a game. Let's try and get out with 80 plays or less. Anything more on the Texans game?
No, let's get to the ball and parlay.
All right, ball and parlay time. I'm going to start. I'm going to stick with the one I gave out earlier this week. I'm hoping that I'm overthinking it. You know what, Five Star? I love consuming gambling media from other guys, and a lot of them aren't even good as us, but I enjoy listening to the shows. But I like to put my bets in before I listen because I'm like, I enjoy listening, right? But I don't want it to be affecting me here. So I put a lot of stuff in on Tuesday. And then, like you, wait for a lot on Friday. Hear what you got going for us with Ski there, looking into that college football. So I like to bet real early in the week and then maybe right before the game, especially when I'm just looking for line movement. Like, for example, last night, the San Francisco bet, a lot of that was, man, you know, we've seen what happens with these public dogs, right? Watching Atlanta go from +3 to -1 over the course of a week made me think, oh, man, I think people are over putting a little bit too much into a couple of these 49ers injuries. So I'm going to go with my first thought here. I'm not going to allow myself to overthink it because as it's getting closer to kick, you know, the 6 points is seeming like more and more. Against the high-powered Buccaneers offense. But give me the Detroit Lions -6.
All right, you got it there from Spread. He's going with the Detroit Lions minus 6, and I will be also on the bandwagon with him on that one. You guys already know I got the Texans plus 3.5. If you've been watching all week, you know that that's a play for me. And as always, I got to give you guys some tennis as well. Let's go to the Tokyo. We're going to go with my girl, Sonia Keenan, Sophia Keenan, but her nickname is Sonia. So Sonia Keenan, not the player she used to be. She's been having some mental struggles and things like that. Heavy crown to wear when you're successful. You know, I said that the show is called Mount Everest because more people die on the way down than going up. And that's the situation that Keenan's going through right now. Just had a difficult time since winning that major at the Australian Open. She was really hot before that. Was a runner-up at the French Open and was a top 10 player. And the last couple of years, she has not been a top 10 player. She's barely a top 50 player now. Her dad's had a lot of matches, but she still can turn it on when necessary. And especially with this number being minus 140 for the first set, I like her a lot. She's going to be facing off against Moyuka Uchijima, who's a young girl, 24-year-old from Japan. I would not mess with her for the whole game because I don't like the line for the game. The line is telling me that it might be a little closer than people think, might go 3, but Uchijima is one of those girls who I fade in the first set always. For some reason, she doesn't start fast, and Keenan should be able to break her a couple times in the first set and get the first set out the way. So let's go first set with Keenan against Uchijima out there in Japan. And then also, we're going to go to Guangzhou to the WTA 2 as well. Another girl, it's all based on how they start. Alicia Parks, beautiful girl, great body. But, man, she's a head case. She doesn't start the game at all fast. And she's playing against Tomjanovic, who's a veteran, really loves playing on hard courts. I think that she'll be able to get the first set at least and probably the whole match against Parks. But we're just going to go with the first set with Tomjanovic at minus 240. So take those two. And also we're going to take the Houston Texans plus 3.5. Anything for the people before we get out of this spread?
Yeah, let me jump in here. Funk's got the question. Any thoughts or plays on the Rockets game tomorrow? I think it's an under game. I'll tell you why I like Wednesday a lot more than Tuesday. We won't go over Wednesday right now, but I'll tell you my concerns with betting each one of these games. So Houston Rockets plus 7.5, right? You look at that. Oh, right. I think the Rockets are pretty close to being as good as the Thunder this year. 7.5 seems great, but think about how these playoff games go and just also think about how the Thunder did as home as favorites, especially. Average margin of victory last year was double digits. Also, Kevin Durant's first game with the team, the Thunder don't have any changes at all. So if you did like the Rockets, I would look towards the Thunder here, but let's say you did like the Rockets, I would play them first half because I think this might be one of those things where, you know, they're going to come out excited. KD's got the whole summer of rest. I don't think he was even in the playoffs last year, right? So plenty of rest for him. He's going to be excited. I'll bet you he starts out hot. I could see the Rockets taking this one close in halftime. But overall, I like the Thunder there, but not enough to bet it. Just looking, there's so many better spots on Wednesday night. Total 227.5. I hate asking about the under game. You know what? And that was a play for me for a while. Was the under 227 unders on the opening week. Just the idea that these teams, you know, a lot of them were still figuring things out. They're playing a little slower, pretty excited because, you know, they put a lot of these rivalry games on to start their first week. However, over the last couple of years, that has not worked. They put up huge scores on opening night. It's not like it used to be. So I say you can't really play a trend here on opening night. I used to like opening night unders. You can't. You look at the game, makes me want to lean to an over. But I feel sides are easier to do on the before we have data than totals. So staying away from that one. Warriors and Lakers. That's an interesting game here, right? Warriors were actually playing at a first place clip there for the part of the regular season that they both had. Butler and Steph in there. Be interesting to see how they're doing. Favorite on the road. However, I think the Lakers might be a little better, at least, you know, in a short-term game, short-term situation, without LeBron in the lineup. All the usage, right? The Luka props, they're not going to be able to put them high enough. And it just makes the team a little better defensively. The only place they get weaker is just that they can't stagger the two and can't have 48 minutes of elite offense. So I can make good arguments on both sides there. Same thing with the total here. Lean towards the over, but I'm going to stay away from totals for a week. So that's a quick NBA breakdown of what I see for tomorrow night. Like I said, though, those games are exciting. They're going to be fun to watch as fans. I think we're the real pros, we're going to jump into action here. It's going to be on Wednesday. Some of these more boring games, like Hornets versus Nets, right? Not very exciting, but I actually think there's a bigger edge in that one. So that's a quick NBA breakdown for you guys.
I look forward to the NBA. I bet the NBA the first month when everyone's back healthy and happy and ready to play, then I back up off of it afterwards because now you get into the long, drawn out, season. And the same with baseball. I love betting baseball in April. When they first start, I always am able to find winners because you're getting the best of both teams. And if I got everyone playing and everyone motivated, I can pick some, basketball. I can pick some baseball. The problem is when you get into all that extra work that you guys have to do with NBA, which is travel and how many days they've been off, and I don't like doing all that. I just
and who's sitting, who's questionable, which coach lies, right? Like, right. Doc Rivers used to kill us in Philly with his Embiid's gonna play, and then he's ruled out, or the opposite, he's not gonna play, and then all of a sudden people were texting each other, why is he out there and shoot around? I thought he wasn't gonna play, and they would change their minds. So
say though, Spread, about that OKC Rockets game, usually in those situations, the team that's the defending champion doesn't have as much edge. It seems like if they're playing a team who's also trying to take the crown from them, who cares about the game and wants to make a statement, sometimes we've seen in the past where, the team that's getting the rings that night loses. OKC is a really talented team. I've been watching the starting five. Learned a lot about – I already knew all that stuff about Harden because he's good friends with a girl, Molo, who I kind of, mentor. She was, a young girl running around my wife when I was still in Houston. And now she's, over Harden's whole program. She's, his manager's best friend, and she was on there a lot. So it was good to see her on there. But I knew a lot about Harden's life because he's still based in Houston, does everything in Houston. I did not know a lot about KD. I did not know a lot about Halliburton. I did not know a lot about SGA. SGA is an impressive young man. He's one of those few guys who's confident without being arrogant, and it exudes through him and exudes to his team. And I see why he has a really confident dad. He got a dad who's kind of, still carries himself like a young man, and a mom who was a track star as well. So SGA is just really impressive. So I won't be fading him because I know that he's going to have that team ready to play. He's the clear, uncut leader of that team, has done one of the most outstanding jobs as being a leader in all of sports, because people don't remember when he went to OKC, nobody wanted to be there, and he didn't run from it. He stayed there and did something that Harden, KD, Chris Paul, Westbrook, none of the guys who came to OKC could do, and that's bring a title to that market, to Oklahoma City. And I know that they love him out there, and they have the right type of guy. They also was breaking down some film showing his footwork. Even though he isn't as athletic as Kobe, boy, he sure does have Kobe's fundamentals down as far as in footwork, spins, offensive moves. He's a great player. And from watching that show, I became a much bigger fan of SGA. I don't like the Rockets starting lineup, Spread, at all. I don't like the fact that they're going all bigs to start the season. They're going with Amen Thompson at point guard. I hate that because now he's going to have to deal with bringing the ball up, more energy. I like Amen off the ball. And I know the Van Fleet injury caused to where now he's going to be on the ball. I don't like that at all. So hopefully, and the lineup that they have, he has to bring it up because you got Kevin Durant, Jabari Smith Jr., Alper Seguin, and Steven Adams. That lineup makes no sense. I'd start.
The only other person is Durant to bring the ball up.
I'd start, and that's still more work on him. And I don't want more.
Yeah, as I say, you'd have to drop him down to 32 minutes if you do that.
Yeah, I'd rather start. I feel like they should have gave Reed a shot. Even if he doesn't play the most minutes, let Reed bring up the ball and put the energy into getting the set started. Or either Tari Eason. But I would have wanted one of the. I like Steven Adams coming off the bench. I like what he brings to the second team, and then you can implement him later in the game as the double bigs. But right now, Udoka's feeling himself, and he's trying to, you know, change the game where it's back to double bigs because he's that type of guy. Instead of it being about 3-point shooting, so he wants to be where, like, we're just punking everybody. We're the more aggressive team. We're bigger. We're stronger, and we play defense. But I think that Jabari Smith is going to have a huge leap this year. Jabari Smith looked really good in the preseason. He's learning a lot from KD, and he's benefiting a lot from him being over there. So I'll be very interested as a fan. Me and my son will be tuned in. I won't have a play on until maybe tomorrow. I will, depending on how the market shifts. But I'd probably like Jabari Smith Jr. to go over on his points in that game because he showed himself to be a really competitive guy and a very, very efficient 7-foot guy. He's a little bit taller than KD now, so I'm expecting big things out of Jabari Smith Jr. I'm expecting big things out of our men. I don't like him at point guard, though. And then I'm expecting big things also from Taurus. KD takes a pay cut so we can sign Tari. I think if they haven't done the deal, it's on the way to getting done. But Tari Eason is a really huge part. And if you remember when they first drafted him, you and I couldn't believe how lucky the Rockets were to get him in the position that they got him in the draft. So for everyone who watches the show, you know, a lot of stuff that we talk about years ago always come, you know, to fruition. So this is a show for sports bettors and for real sports bettors. We're a really niche community, but we're a tight community, and we love to sharpen each other, man, because iron sharpens iron. As always, I dedicate this show to the greatest shooter sports fan I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. I continue to do this for you, Dad. And I also want to say rest in peace, man. We lost a couple people last week. We lost yesterday. We lost Doug Martin, who was a really good running back for Tampa Bay. But I remember him being really good at Boise State, man. So rest in peace to him. Unfortunately, 36, he leaves this earth. And then also the previous week, we lost D'Angelo. One of the best R&B singers in all of the game, one of the most innovative guys. He only put out a couple albums because when you're good like he was and you're talented like that, that's all you need. He was such a perfectionist. He only, you know, felt like that he could deliver at the level that he wanted to put out, the type of art that he wanted to put out, those two albums, and they're unbelievable, man. His first album, Brown Sugar, is a complete classic. I still listen to it. You can just let it play. You don't have to cut it off. So he died, unfortunately, I believe it was 54, pancreatic cancer. So you guys stay healthy. I posted earlier in this week what I take every morning. Not saying that, you know, I got a complete perfect bill of health. You know, mostly it's prayers and just, you know, the blessings of the Lord keeping me safe and healthy. But I try to do my part by taking certain vitamins and by jogging and working out daily, man. You guys try to do the same because we only get one life and one body. Take care of it, Waging World. It's always us first machine. We'll see you guys on Wednesday.